Welcome, friends, to the December 20th edition of my podcast, Medicine in Action. I would like to thank you all for following me and the questions you've sent me. I've thought I'd do the last episode for the year, and we are turning the corner with the pandemic. As we're bringing 2020 to a close, I'm very enthusiastic that with the approval of both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines, we have taken the first steps to ending this pandemic. Been having, getting a lot of questions from several of the audience about when they will expect to receive the vaccine, what kind of things to expect, do I recommend it? So I thought I'd try to answer these questions as best as I can. So first and foremost, what is my recommendation on the vaccine? I believe, as best as we can tell from the data, that this is a remarkable vaccine. In a very short period of time, less than a year, scientists have taken a brand new technology. They managed to design, create, and test several potential vaccines. And finally, December 11th, we got the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine approval. And now this past Friday on the 18th, we got the Moderna vaccine approval, both of which are interestingly on a platform called the messenger RNA. In a previous podcast, I've spoken about how that is totally revolutionary, where we're introducing a RNA snippet or a message to our own body to make the spike protein against which our body will create immunity. So quite remarkable, and the efficacy was incredible, almost 95% effective. So I wholeheartedly recommend that most people should feel very comfortable getting the vaccine. Of course, there are a few issues. There are two main issues as I see it, or rather three. The first issue is the one of the allergic reactions. So we have seen in Alaska in particular, there have been three reported cases of people getting allergic and one possibly anaphylactic reaction happening soon after the vaccination. So that is a possibility with any and all vaccines. So my one first caveat is that people who have a history of severe allergic reactions and anaphylactic reactions must carry an EpiPen when they go to get the vaccine. Of course, they should discuss it with their physician and see what the risk-benefit ratio is. But if they're doing it, they should have an EpiPen, or make sure the healthcare workers around them have EpiPen, which they should. EpiPen, as many of you know, is an epinephrine injection which will reverse these reactions relatively quickly. In some cases, it would not hurt for those patients if they are okay with using Benadryl, which is an anti-allergic medicine, antihistaminic, to take it prior, and possibly even Pepcid, which is a H2, another antihistaminic of a different kind. A combination of two may help alleviate. But it is, again, an individual discussion between people who have a history of allergic reactions and their physician. But somebody with mild allergies, with proper precautions, should be able to take it. Obviously, people who have severe allergies should not take it without having appropriate EpiPen and other precautions. The second is the cases where we've seen a few cases of Bell's palsy, which is a facial paralysis, usually temporary, one half side of the face. That can happen after viral infections of any kind, even after vaccination. We're not sure if those are related to the vaccine. It's a possibility. The good news is that most of them are self-limited, recover, may require a course of steroids, in some cases antivirals. So I would not take that to be a major reaction. The allergic reactions are definitely an issue. But the percentage so far, out of probably 100,000 doses administered, there are only a handful of cases reported. So again, the incidence is relatively low. And then thirdly, there are certain groups that are not yet studied, that the clinical trials are not done yet, for people younger than 16, for pregnant women. So I would recommend waiting till we have some more guidance. So the questions that are coming up are really about when will we get access to the vaccine. So the first and foremost, there's been an advisory committee of CDC, which has recommended that all healthcare personnel and resident of long-term facilities be given first access. So there are about 21 million healthcare workers and 3 million adults in long-term facilities. So about 24 million people for whom the 48 million doses will be first used. And then the second line would be the essential workers. Those are the police officers, our teachers, our other frontline workers. And then probably people with medical conditions or adults older than 65. So people who don't fall into any of these categories can expect to receive the vaccine perhaps in late winter or early spring. The others will be getting rolled out. And the other question I'm asked is, where are they likely to get the vaccine? So currently I know the hospitals are administering it for their staff and their frontline workers. But I think eventually the best place to receive them would likely be Walgreens or CVS or another chain store. It's not been made clear. We know that Walgreens and CVS are helping administer the vaccine to a lot of the nursing home residents. And hopefully we'll have more guidance on that as time goes on. So the other question we're asked in the U.S. is, will the vaccine be free? Yes, the U.S. government will pay for the vaccine given to Americans, according to CBC. Providers may charge a small nominal fee for administering the vaccine, but the government has mandated that all the insurers cover this fee, so people shouldn't have any out-of-pocket expenses. The other next question I asked is, how long does protection take to kick in? So as you know, both the vaccines do require two shots, the initial and the booster shot, about 3 to 4 weeks later. So it takes about 2 weeks from the second dose for the vaccine's protection to fully kick in. So I would expect people to take full precautions, like they're vulnerable to the disease, for about 6 weeks after they start the series of vaccination. There are, of course, some questions whether both doses are necessary. Currently, the way the studies were done, it is recommended, but there are some smaller subgroup analysis that even one dose may be very protective in a lot of people. But we do not know how long the protection from the first dose may last. So our recommendation is to get both doses to provide at least a durable response for 3 to 6 months. And that is a question that is not clear yet as to how long the immunity will last. The results on natural immunity after the COVID infection have been mixed. So currently from the clinical trials, we can say at least 3 months of immunity is provided. It may be longer. We would expect 3 to 6 months. The other very common question I got from a patient of mine who just recovered from COVID was that he had the COVID infection. Should he still get vaccinated? And if so, how long after the infection? So according to the CDC, the researchers don't know yet how long people are protected from reinfection after recovering from COVID. And there really aren't any clear-cut recommendations. But some of the trials have included people who have recovered from COVID-19. Because even if patients have some natural immunity, that immunity could wane and the vaccine could provide some longer-term benefit. So it is unclear. So patients who've had COVID should discuss it with their physician. One guidance is suggesting that they wait 2 to 3 months after the infection so as not to cause any untoward reactions. But that is not based on data yet. It's based on our best estimate of what we believe is a safe course. What about the safety of the vaccine? So the studies were done were quite diligent. We've had at least 3 months of safety data on about 35 to 40,000 participants who received the real vaccine. And the side effects so far have been very mild for most people, which is common: fever, headaches, rundown, soreness, body aches for a day or two. Now, Could there be long-term side effects that could come up? It's a possibility. Unlikely, but it's possible. So time will tell if that is. But currently, I think in the face of a pandemic and severe outcomes from COVID, it is reasonable to suggest that the risk from the vaccine is a lot lower than the risk from COVID. So the other issue about the allergic reactions that I mentioned in a previous question, I would say that somebody has a history of severe, potentially life-threatening allergic reaction called anaphylaxis to a vaccine, medicine, or food should be very careful getting this vaccine. And if they do, they must carry an EpiPen and let their health workers know they have that issue. And in some cases, they may decide after discussion with the physicians to avoid it completely if that is a problem. The other question is, how many people need to be vaccinated for normal life to resume? And the estimates vary, but most researchers agree about 70 to 75% people will need to be vaccinated for us to get herd immunity and stop the pandemic. What is the meaning of 95% efficacy of these vaccines? So these vaccines have really been far more efficacious than anything we've known with the previous vaccines. Most vaccines that we use are 70 to 75%, some are even just 50% effective. But the fact that both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were significantly more effective is very extraordinary. It's incredible. So it says that basically in the population that got the vaccine compared to the population that got placebo, there was a 95% less chance of them getting the COVID, which is quite incredible. Now, will people be able to choose which vaccine they want, and can they mix the vaccines? So presently, the demand is very high, and I would not really pick or choose between the two. The first vaccine that is made available to you, especially if you're an essential worker, healthcare worker, I would take it. And you have to complete the series of the same vaccine you start with. You cannot interchange the two. But as more vaccines become available, and then we have a little bit better idea whether one of them is less side effects or is better for a certain specific group of people, we may be able to pick and choose. The other big question is coming in is what will happen to children and pregnant people. So as I mentioned, both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine was tested. Now, Pfizer's was tested in individuals 16 and older. So that's how it's authorized. And Moderna's been authorized for individuals 18 and older. But younger children and pregnant women were excluded. But now in the second part of the trials, both Pfizer and Moderna are doing ongoing studies in children as young as age 10 to 12, and also they're including pregnant women. So there is an issue when they're testing the vaccine in pregnant women. They have to complete what are known as developmental and reproductive toxicity studies in animals. So that takes time. So clearly, I think it was a prudent decision to put that on a sidetrack. Do that still, but that data may not be out for maybe another 6 months. So when we have those animal developmental and reproductive toxicity data, then human trials can be completed in the next few months, and that's when we'll have idea if it's safe to give it to pregnant women. The commonest question I'm getting is, can vaccinated people still spread the virus? And that's something we do not know. So we clearly know the vaccine protects people from getting the virus. It also protects bad outcomes from the virus if they were to get it. The chance of dying from the virus is much less when you've had a vaccine. What we do not know is, can people who've been vaccinated be asymptomatic carriers? Means they actually have a low case of the COVID and they're passing it on to other people. So we don't know that yet. So the safest advice would be to use all precautions. Regardless, we are all going to be using masks for the next 4 to 6 months, at least as I see it, through probably mid-summer by June. The primary goal of the vaccine trial was to see whether trial participants became sick with COVID. It was not to test everyone in the trial for asymptomatic infection. So we really don't know that data. But as we get more data, we should be able to get guidance on it. But for now, people should consider the fact that they could be asymptomatic carriers despite having the vaccine. And of course, the question I answered partly in the last one is, can I stop social distancing and wearing a mask? Absolutely not. Not unless 3/4 of our population is vaccinated can we really let our guard down, because we don't know yet whether being vaccinated will prevent us from spreading. So measures of social distancing and wearing a mask need to be continued. And the final question I received is, when will this pandemic end? So we don't know. We believe if we have enough of a vaccine supply, we have to remember we don't just have to vaccine the United States, we have to vaccinate the entire world. So we need a lot of vaccine. It is possible that parts of the world will start to see relatively very low cases of the infection spreading by the end of summer. But parts of the world that are not vaccinated yet may continue to see some outbreaks till probably the end of 2021. So I want to again clarify that if you don't have a history of allergic reactions, please do consider getting the vaccine when it's made available. The best information that we have, based on quite intensive testing, the vaccine is safe. There's always a small possibility of some things we learn in the future as more data comes out, but at the present time, the benefit from the vaccine is far greater than the risk. So I wish you all a very happy holidays, happy new year, and hopefully a very happy and healthy 2021. I will try and do one more podcast probably before the end of the year, just my thoughts on the year, and happy to entertain questions about different issues. Thank you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.